As we approach Easter Sunday, today I want to reflect on a posture or perspective that helps us get a glimpse of the power and importance of this story, which, as Dorothy Sayers says, is the only thing that ever really happened. Stay tuned. Hello, friends. Pastor Tim Westermeyer here, senior pastor of St. Philip the Deacon in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. Good to be with you as always. We are taping this in Holy Week. It's actually Wednesday of Holy Week. I'm anticipating this will come out on Thursday, which is Maundy Thursday. So I want to just offer a couple reflections today, actually a couple of readings that I will suggest as kind of devotional readings for you for Easter. But before we get to Easter, of course, we have to go through Maundy Thursday and Good Friday. You don't get the joy of Easter without the grief and sadness and confusion and pain of Good Friday. So I will remind you again of worship services we have this Holy Week on Maundy Thursday. That will be the evening of the day this is being published. That is a 7 o'clock p.m. Maundy Thursday service. That's the service that recounts the Last Supper of Jesus, where Jesus gives his new commandment. That's where the word Maundy comes from. Mandatum is a mandate that you love one another as I have loved you. Then we have two services on Good Friday. Again, paradoxically called good because that's the day that Jesus died. We have a children's service at 5:30 and a veneration of the cross service at 7 p.m. And then we have a, we here at St. Philip, we call it the first light of Easter on Saturday, Easter Saturday at 5 p.m., and then three Easter Sunday morning services at 8 o'clock, 9:30, and 11. That's a slight change from our usual schedule, just to give a little more breathing space between what is a busy Sunday, and appropriately so, and celebratorily so. I don't know if that's a word, but there I just said it. Anyway, so I hope to see you. First of all, I just want to say I hope to see you at all of our Holy Week services, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and at one of our Easter services this weekend. So now, anticipating Easter, I want to read two things, which I don't know if these are going to come up in my Easter sermon or not. They may not. But of course, Easter is about the resurrection of Jesus, right? But as I have lived with that truth throughout my ministry, I guess I would say it has become more and more apparent to me that I'm going to use a couple of looking at stars or suns analogies here, that the resurrection is either too bright, like the sun, or too sort of mysterious, like a distant star, to be able to see it well when you look at it directly. So often, if you're looking for a star that's a little faint, you may know this, you can see it better by just sort of looking off to the side of that star a bit. Or if you're trying to see a bright star, like our own sun, like you would typically have to use some kind of eye covers, or maybe even cover the entire sun so that you can see the edges of it more clearly. And in the same way, I think when we stare directly at the resurrection, it's hard to grasp or to understand or to recognize it for what it is. And therefore, I have found, and other authors confirm this, that one of the most powerful ways to recognize what is going on in the resurrection is by turning our gaze just from the side or to the side of it to look at the first followers of Jesus, the disciples, and see how this incredibly powerful event impacted them. And so I'm going to, again, as a sort of form of devotion for you this Holy Week and as you anticipate Easter, I'm going to read two short statements that basically say the same thing in slightly different words. The first I'm going to read comes from a book I mentioned last week. This is a series of 12 short plays by Dorothy Sayers. And what I'm going to read actually comes from her introduction to those plays, where she's sort of explaining the challenge of writing about this most important story in the world, and providing some both dramatic and theological context for it. So here's the passage. And again, remember, my point here is that by looking at the disciples, paying attention to the disciples, I actually think we get a more profound and deeper understanding of the power of the resurrection. So here's what she writes in that introduction. The disciples of Jesus, plunged into cowardice and despondency by the human tragedy of the crucifixion, needed only to be convinced by the resurrection that that which had suffered and died was in actual historical fact the true being of all things, to recover their courage and spirits in a manner quite unparalleled, and to proclaim the divine comedy loudly and cheerfully, with the utmost disregard for their own safety. Why and how the suffering of God should have this exhilarating effect upon the human spirit is a question for atonement theology. That it had this effect on those who believed in it is plain. Okay? So again, this sort of plain, as Dorothy Sayers says, historic fact, something happened that changed and transformed the disciples. And part of the power, part of the mystery of Easter is to get at whatever that was. I mean, it's the resurrection, of course, but again, it's hard to look directly at the resurrection, as I'm saying. The other passage I'll read comes from, I was just chatting with Tim about this, the very creatively titled book, A History of the Christian Church, 4th edition, which doesn't sound particularly exciting, but it's by Williston Walker and a few others. But there's, again, a very similar passage in an early chapter in this book that ever since it's chapter 3 called Jesus and the Disciples. And ever since I read it years ago, it struck me as a really powerful distillation of exactly what I'm talking about here, that the disciples were changed. They were transformed. They were set free. They were released and able to go out into the world and share this incredible news, even though it meant they put themselves in harm's way. So here's how he writes about this same thing I'm now kind of repeating. What Jesus taught and did was, in the experience of his disciples, vindicated by his being raised after death to the life of the kingdom which he had proclaimed. The how of this conviction is one of the most puzzling of historical problems. The fact of it is unquestionable. It seems to have come first to Peter, who in that sense at least was the rock leader on whom the church was founded. All the early disciples shared it. It was the turning point in the conversion of Paul. It gave courage to the scattered disciples, brought them together again, and made them witnesses. Henceforth, they had a risen Lord in whom the reality of God's kingdom was already fulfilled, and whose present glory they could, in a preliminary way, share, even while they waited for its universal manifestation. So, I hope that makes some kind of sense. Again, if you have questions about this or thoughts about it, I would appreciate them. And as I mentioned last week, if you have thoughts or questions or curiosities about Easter that you would like discussed on Easter Sunday, there may still be time for me to include that in my sermon. I'm still working on it and still thinking and praying about it. So, at the end of all of this, I guess I just want to say a blessed Holy Week to all of you. I do hope I'll see you at our worship services as we celebrate this greatest story ever told. And I wish you Easter blessings. And as always, until next time, be well, stay in touch, and God bless.